Sue, would you please read the time certain?
Item 118, accept the first annual report of the North and Northeast Neighborhood Housing Strategy Oversight Committee.
Commissioner Dan Salzman.
Thank you, Mr. President. One year ago, the Portland Housing Bureau came before us to present a set of strategies that would begin to address the ongoing displacement of longtime residents from the historic neighborhoods of North and Northeast Portland. The result of a seven-month-long community process, the North-Northeast Neighborhood Housing Strategy was developed with the input of more than 450 community members, as well as dozens of faith leaders and community leaders. It began with the question of how to invest $20 million, an additional $20 million of housing money in urban renewal, to have the greatest community impact. But beyond dollars and cents, the strategy would also have to answer another question, and that is, how will this plan be any different than all those that have come before it? The plan outlines investments in home repair programs to help homeowners retain their homes. It included plans for the development of rental apartments that families on modest incomes would be able to afford. It proposed strategies to help more community members achieve the dream of home ownership. And it established a goal of giving longtime residents, those already displaced or facing displacement, a first priority for these opportunities through what is known as a preference policy. We established a mechanism for transparency and accountability to the community itself, and that is the Oversight Committee, made up of community members and formed and charged by the City Council with the role of overseeing the implementation of the strategy, including the investment of the $20 million and the development of the associated programming and policies, and to report to City Council annually, and today is their first annual report to us, about how the Portland Housing Bureau and its contractors are accomplishing the goals in the strategy, or how we're not accomplishing the goals. Since June, the Oversight Committee has met five times to hear updates from Housing Bureau staff and partners and to ask the tough questions necessary to ensure the highest level of equity and transparency. Approximately 400 community members have attended these public meetings to date. As I said, today the Oversight Committee makes its first report to the City Council, evaluating the progress of the City, the Housing Bureau, and its partners toward our shared goals in this first year. So we are joined by three distinguished members of the committee, and I'd like to invite them up as I announce them. They are Bishop Stephen Holt, Portland native. Bishop Holt is the committee chair, as well as the senior pastor, Kingdom Nation Church, where he has served the community for 20 years. Bishop Holt works to achieve lasting social change for the community by facilitating partnerships with public agencies, as exemplified by his involvement in the North-Northeast Strategy Plan from its inception. Dr. Lisa Bates, we're also very pleased to have Lisa Bates here. She is an associate professor and director of the Center for Urban Studies in the Toulon School of Urban Studies and Planning at Portland State University. Her research examines housing policy and planning with a focus on social justice and issues of institutionalized racism in policy design and implementation. And she is engaged in a variety of planning and policy efforts from New Orleans to Chicago to Portland. And she was most recently awarded the 2016 Dale Prize from Cal Poly Pomona for excellence in urban and regional planning. Congratulations. And our final committee member is Virgie Ruiz. Virgie has ties to the local community going back to World War II when her parents first came to Portland from Mississippi. She's a graduate graduate of Boise Elementary, Washington High School, and Portland State University, and today she works at Self Enhancement, Inc. So thank you all for being here, and Bishop Holt, we'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Commissioner Saltzman, Commissioner Fritz, and President of Council. It's good for us to be together and to talk about what is a significant moment, I think, in the history of our city. I won't go through the background. I think you addressed that. But just to make sure that for the sake of those who are in the audience to talk about what the Oversight Committee's charge is, I want to be clear on that. The North and Northeast Portland Housing Strategies Oversight Committee is created with the responsibility of three major areas: to advise on and review program proposals and plan development, to monitor the implementation of policy and programming and associated outcomes, and then to advise the housing director and housing commissioner on progress, issues, and concerns associated with the North-Northeast housing strategy. Now, this is a brand new activity. It's something that was put in place to specifically assist making sure that promises made became promises kept. What would be different this time? And so the Oversight Committee was put in place. In light of that, you can anticipate with anything new, challenges in the process. One of the things that we did and thought was valuable was to make sure that this was an open community process. And so our meetings have been held in the community. We've held them in the community and we've held them in the evenings so that individuals who are most impacted can come and hear what has transpired. It's been a significant contribution that way, I think. Let me identify the people who are on this committee. Myself, I chair it. Felicia Tripp, who is the director, deputy director of Portland Housing Center. Dr. T. Allen Bethel, who's the senior pastor of Maranatha Church. Of course, Ms. Virgie, who is a community representative or community member. And Dr. Lisa Bates, who, as you've already said, is associate professor at Portland State University. Katrina Holland, who's a community member. Lorenzo Poe, who has been very involved in a variety of areas, but is now the chief equity and diversity officer of Portland Public Schools. Sarah Zahn from Girding Eaglin, a developer here. Orlando Williams, an owner of black-owned business. Lisa Faust, who is the senior vice president of Pacific Continental Bank. Thought it was important to have a group of representatives that could look at the issues from a variety of angles so as to give us the best viewpoint on what we do in relationship to the Oversight Committee. Now, after the 7-month process happened and the community was involved in determining what best areas, what were the needs, what were the concerns for the initial $20 million that had been allocated, there were roughly four areas identified. I'm going to talk about those areas: preventing displacement, creating new homeowners and developing new homes, creating rental homes, our preference policy or land banking or land acquisition. So I'm going to talk about what we actually did in the last few months. And the monies that I talk about are reflected specifically on what has been done. It does not reflect all of the $20 million, but it reflects what has been done in the last 6 months or so. The first one, in preventing displacement. What you have and what you see are the number of people who have received grants and loans, specifically for home repair. So the number 18 for loans, north-northeast, number 12, that number represents loans from the general fund, and then 5 loans that happened in ICURA or the interstate, give me the acronym. Regular TIF allocation, but I'm trying to remember the
interstate area. Urban renewal area.
Thank you very much. And then 41, that number represents total people received grants from the general fund. Again, preventing displacement, home repairs, how it breaks down: 84% roughly African American, 25% or 12% white, and then 2% and 2% other, those who received the funding. And that's for grants, and this is for loans, the breakdown of those who received loans and what areas they lived in, and where those dollars came from. Now, this slide represents home repair and how home repair money was awarded. The purple houses are the general fund, people who received help from general fund monies. The blue houses are those who received help from grant money. And the pink houses are those who received money from tax increment financing. So as we looked at and were engaged in making sure that the dollars being allocated were going to the arenas that had been identified, the other portion of that is strategies around home ownership. So what's going to happen to help create new home ownership? What's going to happen to help invest in homeowners? So $5 million was allocated or set aside for this particular area. And this is, I think, the $5 million has been determined in its allocation. And I think here's a process, or here's an example where the process being new runs into challenges. A distinct and separate group was compiled to look at a home ownership strategy. And after that meeting, or after a series of meetings and determining ways to allocate the funds, it would have been helpful for once the decisions had come to suggesting points for that to then come back to the Oversight Committee, for the Oversight Committee to have a view over what was recommended by the subcommittee so that decisions, information could be made. I think that as we go forward, I think we'll be better in our process because now that it's in place, we will, I think, have a system that can work. And so the allocation that's reflected was determined by the Portland Housing Bureau, but not determined by the oversight, if that makes sense.
And what is AAAH?
That is the acronym for the African American Alliance for Home Ownership. Oh, okay. Thank you. I knew I was leaving out an A.
Can I ask just a technical question? On page 4 of your report, you have the strategy, and you have a column called homes created or households assisted. Is that the goal, or are those the numbers of people impacted through these investments?
Which you looking at this?
Yeah,
that's the goal.
That's the goal.
That's the overall goal.
So, do we have data on the number of homeowners? Homes created or households assisted yet, or is that still in the pipeline?
That's the funds that have just been awarded through the RFP. So
I see.
We have not done any development down payments.
Okay, and from the RFP, could we back out how many homes we hope to impact off of this investment? I'm just saying, I think at some point it's easier for us to track people and homes than
Absolutely.
Aggregate dollars because the dollars don't tell the story. Anyway, we don't need that right now, but I think it'd be interesting to track how many people now are homeowners, how many homes are built, not just dollars.
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. Agreed. So we talk about rental houses, and I'm just talking about what we've done at this point or what has transpired from the Oversight Committee's perspective. creating rental homes, which was to redevelop one or more additional properties either owned by PHB, the county, or other partners. One of the sites that was identified was the Grant, what has been historically known as the Grant Warehouse site. It's on MLK between Cook and Ivy. And there will be 81 units that are going in, 81 affordable rental units that will be going in on that site. And then in fall, there was the fall of 2015, a notice of fund availability for additional TIF money, and two sites will be identified for that, and that's what's called the King Park site, Rosa Parks and MLK, and then the Port City Development site, which is identified. And talk a little more about the Grant Warehouse site. There will be 8,000 square feet of commercial space, 1,400 square feet of community room. And the exciting thing for me is that this is, the intent is that this will be a family supporting rental unit. So 31 bedrooms, 35 two bedrooms, 16 three bedrooms, and part of our conversation is to whether or not they can actually get four bedrooms, four bedroom units in. And then the partners that are involved, the people that were selected, PCRI, Girding Edlin, Colas Construction, Carlton Hart Architect. And so one of the other aspects that's exciting for us as the Oversight Committee is that it's really reflective of community partners, stakeholders, and involving them in the process. It's very important. And then I think probably the thing that we're most excited about that we were able to accomplish and begin to implement and looking at how to implement is the preference policy. And we'll talk more around that preference policy, but to give you an overview, you know, the city urban renewal has marginalized and displaced historic residents of North and Northeast Portland. Future city actions should be mitigate marginalized or displacing community members. And it's designed to give preference to marginalized families with historic roots in North and Northeast Portland. It is probably one of the most significant actions to say that what has transpired historically matters, and we want to do something different about it going forward. And so that's extremely important. It will apply to rental housing and home ownership programs in North and Northeast Portland. Preference policies affect the order of the list of services, not program eligibility. Again, more will be elaborated in a moment. And then the Housing Bureau programming is for low and moderate income households.
That means under 60% of MFI?
I think it means up to 80%, but 60% MFI, yes.
Home ownership is up to 80%.
The challenges we faced were land banking. Again, we'll talk more about that, but I want to explain land banking briefly. Simply means securing property in advance. To purchase property that hasn't been developed or can be redeveloped or repurposed or secure it for that future use. To this point, the Oversight Committee's knowledge of what's transpired in regard to that is minimal. And that's a major concern because, as you know, every day in the city of Portland, property values are continuing to climb. So it's something that we must do. Next steps, then, and I didn't give an opportunity for Virgie, so Sister Virgie, Miss Virgie, I'd like you to just kind of share the process from your perspective as a community member and being on the Oversight Committee. Thank you very much for your time and investment in this.
Thank you. My name is Virgie Ruiz, and I'm a community member, and I currently live in the neighborhood and have grown up in the neighborhood and have been educated in the city. And being a part of the Oversight Committee has been a wonderful experience for me, allowing me to come to the public meetings that have been offered to hear what our community residents would like to see and would like to be able to return home again. And to see this committee come together to formulate and to come up with preference policy and other important ideas to help bring this to pass and even obtain additional funds to support the programs has been a dream come true. And I've learned quite a bit, and I'm still learning as a part of this committee, what it takes to have a city involved and what it takes to help people that are in need, and especially with affordable housing. It's one of the things that has caused a lot of cities in this country to fall apart and to cause problems in the city. But I believe Portland is taking the right initiative in getting a group like this Oversight Committee together, people that are knowledgeable, and even people such as myself that I'm learning about the process to be able to participate and do something in a positive way to help improve things for this city. I think this is a great city, and it can have a good legacy by participating as it is participating now and continues to participate and support, and to be able to bring back affordable housing so people can indeed live in the city, they can work in the city where their jobs are, children can be educated in their communities and back into the schools, and see some wonderful things happen for our community residents. I was looking recently at Jefferson High School, who has done a wonderful job in graduating students, and that used to be our primary high school where our students went to. And I'm hoping by the return of residents to this inner city area, they'll be able to benefit, go to college, and be able to be successful in life. And those are the things that I found to be very valuable, and I don't mind coming and giving my time and attend meetings to be supportive of it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Dr. Bates, you're going to talk about our next steps. So
some of these are our own next steps and others sort of expectations that we have for what we'll be hearing about and learning about. First, in land banking, our report to the Bureau and our expectation from the Bureau is to see a plan and a strategy developed and to have our oversight function as we move into land banking. Land banking was added as part of this $20 million allocation because of our recognition, many community-based organizations and housing organizations' recognition of the top speed at which the market is moving, that it's really critical to take land off the market now so that it can be used in combination with other subsidies to develop affordable housing. As the Bishop mentioned, it's something that does not seem to have gotten off to a very quick start. We've heard very little about it, although originally it was supposed to begin, the implementation was supposed to begin immediately. So we're expecting to see more from the Bureau in terms of a strategy for what kinds of properties it is seeking to acquire and how they would be matched up with housing, whether multifamily or single family development, a strategy screen for acquiring land, surplus land from other bureaus, and some kind of process for engaging with other government entities or the school districts, other owners of land, public sector owners of land in the area, so that we can get to the urgency that is needed around that strategy. On the preference policy, again, a group that had a small subgroup working closely with Bureau staff, particularly Matt Schaubel, to develop this, and I think as a member of that committee, I would like to really commend that effort, not only for taking the time to craft a very careful policy, but also to take the time to think about how to communicate about it into the community, to community members. It's a complicated thing. We're looking forward to the implementation of that as a really significant achievement, to a rollout of some outreach and additional communications, partnership with community-based organizations, and an online tool for people to be able to look at their ranking on that preference policy. That will be getting ready for the homeownership down payment assistance funds that we just recently learned about being allocated, and will be a really important part of this strategy of both keeping people in place and helping people to move back. Thirdly,
before you move on from that,
sure.
Thank you, Dr. Bates. Could you? I'm very impressed with the preference policy, and it's really exciting. Could you, for folks at home, just give a quick rundown about some of the factors that would get you points in the preference policy?
Sure. The preference policy is developed to give a higher ranking to those whose own family experience includes displacement due to previous or ongoing actions by the city of Portland. So for example, if you are a family member, a grandparent or parent or yourself who appears on the list of homes that were taken by eminent domain or condemned by the city in order to do urban renewal actions in the past, that would be a priority ranking. And then following from that top priority, having again a grandparent, a parent or yourself who has lived in the areas that were designated as urban renewal areas over time. And it's a policy that will apply both to families or households who still live inside the study area and may be at risk of being displaced, as well as to those who have already moved away because of affordability concerns.
So it's entirely based on the history of having lived in the area, so regardless
right.
of race.
That's so right, right. So having been affected by these historical actions, policy actions.
Right. And since there are unfortunately many more people who fall into those categories than we have funds for, if you, how will you deal, what's the proposal for dealing with if you have 100 applications that all have the same rank and you can only fund 50 of them? How will that be decided?
Well, I that will be deeply challenging. I mean, I think that is a reality across all of these programs are not going to be sufficient to meet the need. There's all of the other kinds of screenings that a tenant, for example, would have to go through that may sort households beyond the preference policy. Of course, there's basic income eligibility, but I think at the end of the day, there are many more households who are struggling with affordability, who have been affected by past policy and who would like to come back, then these funds could house.
So it will be important for me to know how, you know, how many are in excess of what we can provide, because I think this is a wonderful program. The other thing I'd like to offer is that we have recently dealt with a similar, well, it's not really similar, but it's with a lot of applicants all wanting a fair process to when ranked the same in the marijuana program, and we came up with a lottery system that may or may not be helpful to you. I'd be happy to share what we have piloted to see if it might be helpful to you, because it's just so hard when there's so many deserving families. There just is no way to choose between them. So I'd be happy to give any input, because I it's really exciting the work that you're doing. It's groundbreaking. As you started off, Bishop Holt, it's not been done before, and it's correcting what we've done in the past. So thank you so much for all of your work.
Dr. Bates, sorry.
I have a
follow-up question off that. And then is Director Krieger going to, is he available to testify afterwards?
Sure.
Because I'd like to, this question of land banking has been coming up over and over again, and I'd very much like to know what are some of our tools. Because as been noted, clock is ticking, and we're getting, I mean, we have nonprofit developers coming to us saying we need bridge money to acquire and hold some land ahead of us even determining whether we can fund a project. It's a bit of a catch-22, because if we don't acquire the dirt, we can never have the conversation about whether we can actually fund it. And I'm not sure our toolkit is as robust as it could be, so I'd be interested in knowing what those strategies are. The question I have for you is on the question of a preference policy, recognizing that federal law is very unsettled, and with this Supreme Court and their view of stare decisis, it could become even more unsettled. Has a preference policy been tested somewhere in the country under the Fair Housing Act? Do we know whether there has been a fair housing screen, challenge, guidance?
I don't think so.
I'm sorry? Okay. I mean, so just, I mean, it's still a factor, because the person that doesn't get the unit is still going to have a claim if they choose under federal law, and how that gets framed and how it's adjudicated is going to be, we may end up being the test case of how that gets worked out. So. Fair enough.
I'm not an attorney, but I'll feel optimistic, because the Supreme Court has recently reaffirmed the disparate impact test for fair housing. We have the affirmatively furthering fair housing rules have been propagated by the federal government that allows for a conversation about how we achieve those goals. And I think that this work is very much informed by and guided by the values of fair housing. But I am not an attorney.
And it has been vetted by the city attorney.
It has been vetted very thoroughly, and we have had many engagements with the city attorney's office on the policy development committee, and then, of course, with staff, extensive contact with the city attorney's office. Okay, so thirdly, moving into 2016, we're anticipating the allocation of the TIF Lift Fund, which will also, include programming that the Oversight Committee will look at, perhaps expanding into the North Portland area with additional membership. And I think as we look at goals, something which the committee has recognized in terms of how this money would be spent, what kinds of programming, that the Bureau hosted a series of very successful, very well-attended public forums, both in the North Northeast area as well as in East Portland, where many folks have already been displaced to talk about priorities, needs, goals. And there's really rich information there with which to develop the kinds of new programming or responses or tools with this TIF Lift money that can respond to additional challenges besides the programming that the Bureau is already rolling out with this additional $20 million. So we would hope to see the Bureau go back to the information from those forums to look for gaps and potential areas for addressing issues with this additional TIF Lift.
Well, I just want to make sure. So by TIF Lift, you're talking about the additional money the Policy Council and BDC
yes.
made to increase the housing set aside
yes.
from 30 to 45%?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you for that clarification.
Yeah, I just want to make sure. I'm sure I remembered it right.
As you can see, there's a lot of work to do. One of the things we're also doing is a collaborative effort with the Portland Development Commission and looking kind of at a strategy for a best practice approach. How does economic development support housing development? How does housing support economic development? And how can we partner to utilize the dollars that are involved in the TIF Lift, as well as the monies associated with Portland Development Commission's oversight for economic development. So how can we partner and leverage these dollars to have the biggest impact and the best impact with a good strategy? So that's part of what we're working at. And then another piece, which is really my passion, is the education and support for families who will be returning. The neighborhood has changed. It's a different environment. So how do we create a net of support that acclimates, reacclimates, affirms, and supports the family needs of those families who are returning? What can we do for the community that presently exists, that's grown up around in these last couple of years that no longer look like or may not necessarily value what once was? To help to, as much as possible, get in front of potential tensions and help create and foster a healthy family or healthy communities. And then the further opportunities, you already talked about inclusionary zoning. We're super excited about hearing that. The screening criteria, how we do all of the things that we're doing, and then city displacement or mitigation strategies. There's a lot of work to do. We've been at this now for 6 months, and our intent is to, over the next year, meet every other month. Again, continue to meet in the community, continue to make it available for community members to give feedback and be engaged in the process. That is...
Your meetings are now being covered by Channel 30?
They're being covered by Channel 30. That's right. They're going to be...
I'll get the word out.
Absolutely.
Bishop, can I go back to something you said earlier?
Yeah.
You mentioned collaboration between PDC and the Neighborhood Economic Development Committee and the housing dollars. So let's go back in time. One of the things that caused me some heartburn when we grabbed the $20 million was we took it out of economic development. Mm-hmm. We took it out of a hard-earned economic development pot that the community had fought for. So what we were doing is shifting from one pot to another. So it was, in effect, it came at a cost. Mm-hmm. The idea of using the new TIF allocation more dynamically to connect to jobs, I think, is extremely important. So I applaud that for being a priority. And I guess the question is, who's at the table on that discussion? Because we hear lots of interesting ideas from a thematic district to attracting certain kinds of businesses. to investing in existing businesses. There's some people that would like to see storefront improvement grants. Others would like to see seed capital, which is the challenge for a lot of emerging entrepreneurs. There's a ton of good ideas. Who's at the table having that conversation?
Well, it is a new process, and the people that are at the table are the NED, the Neighborhood Economic Development Leadership Team of PDC, which is similar to the Oversight Committee for the Portland Housing Bureau, and the Oversight Committee. So we've come together to begin this dialogue. And part of the dialogue is to assist the NED with the process of how to engage community and hear the voices, hear those thoughts, those strategies, and those ideas. So we're early in our phase, early in our stage of how we're going to do what we do, but those are the players that are at the table at the moment.
Yeah. And do you have another panel?
No, that's it. If you want Director Krieger to come up and answer questions. I'm sure we probably have people that want to testify.
How many people have signed up to testify?
Two people.
Let's do this. Let's go to the community testimony first, because there may be other issues that are raised. And then, Director Krieger, would you come back with Bishop Holt and answer any questions that we have? Thank you very much.
Thank you all.
Will Danny Bell and Joe Levesque please come up?
Welcome.
Hello.
Bell, we'll start with you. We just need your name, and you have 3 minutes, sir.
3 minutes. Okay. My name is Danny A. Bell. My family's been here since the 1930s, the railroad people. My father came here immediately during the Second World War. My mother was here when he landed. He married the girl next door. My parents were very active in various activities in the community. One of them was zoning on Martin Luther King, where they were trying to zone it for business, and they kept it as a housing. I have over 48 years as a community activist, starting with Eugene McCarthy and his national campaign, XYZ. Okay, that's that. I would like to applaud those who have been working on this. I'm a small businessman, have been a small businessman. One of the reasons I'm here is the gentleman that owns Step Above Clothing encouraged me to come here. And I'm very concerned if there will be a wedding between small business entrepreneurs. It's very difficult, even with the mandate for small business loans to jump through all the hoops. And oftentimes, what I've seen, and I have to preface it, also contracted and worked on the Martin Luther King Economic Survey about 7 years ago and did a bunch of interviews with notables such as Bernie Foster, Roy J., et cetera. Oftentimes, this becomes a scenario this becomes a scenario of middle-class sociabilities and sensibilities. Some people are X'd out. Some people are engaged. I'm very encouraged to see that there are new players here, but as the concerns for small business people who have historically been here, that it becomes like the Count of Monte Cristo, if you've ever seen that play. There's two tiers. One tier is excluded at the expense of the other tier. When I worked on the economic survey, there were comments made by people that were very well recognized. Well, the people are ignorant. They're ignorant here in Portland, and black ignorance and black. I was like, these are the people that are supposed to be advancing our interests. How much time do I have on the 3 minutes?
Well, you have about
30
seconds.
Okay, so that's the major impression I'd like to say. I'd like to, one again, to say this is very encouraging. This is something brand new. But if you really want to embrace those in the whole horizon, you have to open your mind. And when you open your mind, you have to have new players and a new criteria. And I look forward to getting some more data so I can be a little bit more specific. Thank you and have a good day.
Thank you, Mr. Bell. Welcome, sir.
Old entrepreneur. Yeah, my name is Joe Levesque. I'm an old builder, developer. I could spend hours. I got 3 minutes here. I could spend hours talking about this stuff. There's a lot of bad stuff going on in our country, and people aren't even talking about it. When it comes to affordable housing, that's my background. Without going on an ego trip with you, I built homes for over 200,000 people. That's a lot of people. Generated over $200 million in tax-free revenue, or tax revenue. That's nothing to be ashamed of. Then I'm from the state of New Hampshire. Live free or die. I was brought up with that stuff, with a hunting gun, with a rifle, walking through the woods. Then when I got out of the Army, I went to California. It was a golden state. Oh, I felt like an eagle, free. I could do anything. When you're in your 20s, you know you can do anything. And I did. I did a few things. Now, California's a bankrupt state. I've been to the state of Washington on some of this stuff. I've been to public meetings before. They're not listening to me. And you guys are not listening to me. You guys have committees. Let me tell you about the biggest committee I ever had. It's between my 2 ears. When you have a committee, 80% of the people on there are there for legal reasons. 15% are prima donnas. And the other 5% is for wisdom. That's why I don't like to deal with committees. I've got solutions here. I got solutions to problems. I can talk for hours. I get a little nervous here talking in public like this. But there are solutions out there. I want to help people. I'm not greedy. I've got solutions to a major problem. You heard about the old foreclosure fiasco back in 2008, the underwater mortgages. I had solutions to that, those problems. And right now what I'm trying to do, and I've made several multi-million dollar pledge donations, not my money, but it's from the funds generated from this program. It would help the universities, it would help the schools, it would help the nonprofits, the 501c3s. But the money, now there's two conditions to the pledges. I want them to write a letter to Washington State University to have them look into the program. If the program works, what do we have to do to make it work? If I didn't think it could work, I wouldn't make that condition. Now, if it can't work, I want them to tell me why it can't. Listen, when it comes to affordable housing, let me tell you something about affordable housing. I got 1 second. I got 2 seconds.
I'll give you a couple more seconds, sir.
Anyhow, there's 5 things you need to build affordable housing. 5. Land, loan, build, sell. Land, loan, build, and sell, that's basically it. But you need 5 laws. How much do you want to borrow? What do you have for collateral? How are you going to pay it back? Who are you? What's in it for the bank? That's it, basically it. That's the place I was brought up in. It's still the same thing. Anyway, I'm running over time here, and I'm sorry.
Sir, thank you for your time, and thank you for your service in the war. I would strongly encourage you to go to a PHAC meeting or one of the follow-up meetings. Sounds like you have a lot of passion around this issue, and I hope you would sit down with some of the oversight committees and share that with them.
Yeah, as long as not too many committees.
I hear you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Colleagues, I'd like to invite Director Krieger to come forward. I think we might have some questions.
Do we have anybody from the Portland Development Commission here also?
No? I don't think so.
I'd like some follow-up to the first testifier's question about small businesses. It seems like the preference policy that this committee has developed may be very helpful in guiding Portland Development Commission in their allocation of their small business loans. So if you could make sure that they hear about that, I think that would be helpful. Thank you. Jillian Detwell is here from the mayor's office, and she'll make sure that's passed along. Thank you.
Director Krieger, welcome. Let's start with any comments you'd like to share based on the testimony, and then I think we may have some follow-up questions.
Well, I'm very proud to be part of the implementation of this strategy, although I was not witness to its formation. I met with Bishop Holt my first week on the job, and I had participated. Actually, the first day I started, August 10th, was the review panel for the grant warehouse funding. and which ultimately led to the selection of PCRI and Gertie Nedelin. And so I've hit the ground running, and North and Northeast Portland was a priority from the very beginning, and it remains a strong priority. And with the good support of the Oversight Committee by PHB staff, I've intersected when necessary with the policy development and program development activities, including the Oversight Committee's work on the preference policy. I would like to say that having operated housing authorities in two states, that HUD enables housing authorities to establish local preferences for the management of their waiting lists. So the fair housing implications of a preference policy in this geographic area is not that much different. For instance, a housing authority would often prioritize victims of domestic violence as a priority so they don't have to wait years to get housing placement. They're in a panic situation. They need to get away from their abuser. So Vancouver Housing Authority, which I operated for some 16 years, provided a local preference for victims of domestic violence. We also provided a local preference for people displaced due to the actions of the city of Vancouver, in this case, demolition and redevelopment of downtown property.
Well, let's just be clear, though. I'm not aware under federal law that's a protected class. So that's there may be a preference, but I was getting at the protected class issue.
Right. And in this instance, it will be administered in a colorblind manner. The scoring happens to relate to geography, not to ethnicity or race, although people were, there were obviously communities of color in that geography. So I'm pretty confident. I'm a board member of a group called the Housing Development Law Institute, which is a national institute based in Washington, D.C., that deals with fair housing law. And while I'm not a lawyer, I work with a lot of lawyers on this very issue. So I think it's been vetted quite well, and we've gotten good guidance from the Office of the City Attorney who attended each of these meetings.
Director Krieger, can I ask this general area of land banking, because it's coming up a lot. We heard from some advocates in Cully that there's some land they want to acquire. They need some bridge loans and other things to acquire the land. And if they don't acquire the land, they forever lose the opportunity to develop it. And it strikes me that it raises at least two problems for us. One is, what flexible tools do we have to provide in a nimble way short-term financing, bridge financing, other things to acquire land, even if we don't end up being the primary developer? And second, how do we administer such a program? I mean, other than being opportunistic, which I would certainly in this market be more receptive to being opportunistic, because I don't think we don't have 6 months to just sort of, you know, deliberate. What are some of the flexible sources of money, and how can we structure it in a way that we can seize the moment, even if it turns out at some point we don't choose to be it doesn't meet our criteria for future development?
Well, I think it's worth mentioning that the Interstate Urban Renewal Area has more money in it than any other active open urban renewal area. So we're actually better suited in North and Northeast Portland, especially in the URA, than we are in Cully, for instance, which is not in an urban renewal area. So as you might expect, I spent a lot of my time thinking about the 85% of the city that's not in an urban renewal area, and the budget that Commissioner Saltzman and I transmitted on Monday of this week does contemplate the securitization of the short-term rental revenue, the transient lodging tax, to generate a $14 million sum of money to
the Housing Investment Fund.
It would go directly to the Housing Investment Fund, which would then be used to acquire sites, preferably outside of URAs. Although we could do bridge financing for sites in URAs and then repay ourselves with TIF, tax increment financing. So the bigger issue, I think, is one of just real estate dynamics. We have made offers on properties. It is a frothy and very volatile market. And one of our challenges as a public entity is we have to underwrite projects based on appraisals. And we have made offers, full money offers, within 48 hours of a site coming to our attention, which we had then been outbid by many offers in excess of the appraised value. that puts a, a challenge upon us, which is, you know, we do not want to overpay for a site with public funds. Therefore, we need either sites that have not hit the market and are therefore bid up by speculative pressures, or who are owned by entities that have a social agenda or social conscience. We are seeking those in different ways. We have been working with buyer's brokers that would bring us properties that are not currently listed. We'd be happy to pay them a listing. We do not currently have an exclusive relationship, so any buyer's brokers that might be listening in on this conversation, we'd be happy to do business with them. And then we have reached out to both institutional and private owners in North and Northeast Portland that have property that is currently vacant or underutilized. That includes the bureaus. You know, we're talking with the other sister institutions within Portland City government. So the Housing Investment Fund was where we would go first to acquire sites from the Parks Bureau, perhaps the Bureau of Environmental Services or the Water Bureau, and then the securitization of the short-term rental revenue will give us quite a lot more money to work with. Javier Mina is assistant director for the Bureau, and as you may know, he was a Wells Fargo banker before he was hired by the city. Javier is my point person on these land negotiations, and I can say that when he brings a site to me, we make a decision usually within the same working day about how best to proceed. We're not overanalyzing or overthinking these issues. And I respect Bishop Holt's point about needing to know what's going on so that there is a sense of movement and a sense of ownership in the strategy.
Are we, and I thank you for that very thoughtful answer. I think I understood most of it. Is implicit in what you're saying that we're constrained with using TIF in terms of what we can and can't do? Because I'm imagining a third category, in between. So you're talking about the Bureau acquiring dirt and then packaging it with other tools in a NOFA and finding a private developer. That's the traditional way we've done it. That's very important. But I'm thinking about another model, which is PCRI, Habitat. Someone comes to you and says, we've worked out a deal on a piece of property, which probably they're going to get a better price than we will. That's why we use third parties to buy natural areas and parks, because once someone says the government's the other side, we end up paying a premium. They've got a deal, but their bank doesn't, they're missing some gap money, some this, some that. Are we able to fill that niche to help our partners acquire dirt, even if we have to at some point ask them to repay it?
Thank you, President of the Chamber of Council. Yes, we are. We actually just finished an agreement with NOAA that is specifically for that purpose. NOAA has a land banking fund that they have not, in the past couple of years, have not been utilized to the great extent. As you recall, NOAA is a nonprofit affordable housing lender for the state.
And a partner when we did the preservation agenda.
Most definitely. And so they used this fund during the preservation process. So they have not been using this fund over the last couple of years. And as you may recall, last fiscal year, the Bureau received $1 million of general fund for housing development, which we were not able to be able to fund any projects. So we are using those $1 million to add to that fund. And what that does, it has made those funds, those resources flexible for nonprofit or for-profit borrowers and lowered those costs associated with the acquisition of property. And it gives them 4 years to identify development resources for that land that they purchased.
So could we, when you come before us later, Director Krieger, to talk about the budget and about your priorities that you and Commissioner Saltzman have set forth, could we carve out a few minutes to talk about what are the pots of money that are available for this flexible purpose?
Mm-hmm.
Combination of, you know, 108 loan money, CDBG, TIF, HIF, the Housing Investment Fund, and just give us a little primer on what dollars are really flexible and can be used for land banking. Because I fear that, you know, once upon a time, people like Mr. Gray, for example, gave that legacy gift to Habitat. Habitat, during a recession, bought huge tracts in East Portland, developed. That's a unique circumstance. timing, the market was good. Other development failed, so they were able to buy it. A source of funds to be able to acquire the LRT. That door is closing. And it does seem to me that we're going to have enough of a challenge financing projects. We sure as heck better make sure we've got dirt to build on. And that's where I want to make sure you have as much flexibility. I want to work with Dan to make sure you have as much flexibility in your toolkit to acquire opportunistically land, even if we don't own it, even if we're just providing some kind of bridge financing.
We stand ready to mobilize all the resources available to us. The idea of using the Network for Affordable Housing as the intermediary is actually much more nimble, much more agile. It's 2% money for 4 years, so it's interest only on the loan balance for a four-year period of time, with the idea being that it would not be a long-term hold. It would just be sufficient for the period of time to get permits. And then we would essentially replace it with permanent financing or whatever gap financing is needed, along with HUD or other bank debt to make a project feasible. So that money will recycle. And NOAA, of course, we're approving the program, so NOAA doesn't have to take each parcel before the City Council for approval. I think that's an excellent way for us to respond quickly to opportunities. I think at the end of the day, you want to make sure that each of those projects is bankable so you don't have a large inventory of land that is waiting for permanent takeout financing. And that's a bit of a art, not entirely science, but it's
particularly because people are being forced to pay above market to mm-hmm. acquire dirt, so it throws our pro formas out of whack.
Indeed.
Thank you, sir.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Other questions or comments from council? Is there anyone else who's present who has not had a chance to testify and would like to do so? Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion to accept the report.
So moved.
Second.
It has been moved and second. Sue, would you please call the roll?
Fritz.
Well, this just shows what happens when you put large quantities of money into the hands of good citizens who come up with strategies on how to spend it in the best interest of the community. Thank you, Bishop Hope, for your leadership of the committee, but thank you, everybody who's been involved in this. As I look around this chamber, there are so many stalwarts of affordable housing and of champions for North and Northeast Portland in the room here, all here maybe to listen, maybe just to support, but all deeply engaged in this process. And that's what it takes to come up with a plan that begins to correct some of the wrongs of the past. And I'm very, very impressed. As I said, I will look to duplicating this in the Portland Development Commission and perhaps in some of our other projects. It's probably a little early to declare success yet, but it's certainly an amazing start. And I am very pleased that you took the time to come to give a detailed report to council and all the community support. We do have many challenges for affordable housing, for home ownership, for displacement, a wide range of housing challenges, which certainly the 7 years that I've been on the council, we've tripled the housing budget. We have done the most we thought we could do at the time, and now we're doing even more under the leadership of First Commissioner Fisher, now Commissioner Saltzman. And it's all of us. And so some of the folks who are writing into us saying, well, what are you doing about housing? What are you doing about displacement? What are you doing about these injustices? We are working together, and it cannot be done by just your committee. It cannot be done by just the Housing Bureau, just the city, just the county. It's all of us. And before you write me an email asking what I'm doing, just know that I'm going to write you back and saying, what are you doing? Because it's about all of us, and it's about much more than just firing off an email once in a while. It's about doing the due diligence like the committee has been doing, meetings and evening meetings, and making sure that they're televised and that community members feel welcome in the places that they're held. There's a whole range of things that you have addressed so thoughtfully, and I'm very grateful. Aye.
Fish.
I'm sorry, Mayor Hales is not here. He may be actually at home watching TV, who knows. But he and Dan launched this initiative. I'm sorry he's not here to see the fruits of year one. A lot of really innovative thinking has come out of this, and I'm pleased to receive the report and have this discussion. Some are going to say, well, $20 million doesn't get as much. That's true. But for the people who are benefited by this $20 million, it's a new start. their lives are improved. The reality is, the bigger storm out there is that we're hundreds of millions of dollars short in terms of the money we need to really address the need. We're backsliding on the focus of 0-30. We have major candidates running for federal office, for presidency, in fact, who said they'd abolish HUD.